When it comes to commercial banking, relationships matter. At Associated Bank, we've got you. With a dedicated team of relationship managers helping you secure financing to best serve you today and tomorrow. Visit associatedbank.com/commercial. Member FDIC.
Thought Leader Thursday this morning, Brett McKittrick is here. He's the SVP and Senior HR Consultant at Associated Benefits and Risk Consulting, part of Associated Bank. Our conversation this morning is going to be on benefits packages and especially on different health and wellness packages. Brett, good morning. Welcome back to the Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me back.
Let's start our conversation talking about benefits provided to by employers to employees. You sent over a wonderful slideshow of all the different things, the different changes that are happening. If you had to pick from a list of all of these things, what are the biggest ones that seem to be emerging?
Sure. And we're talking about from a health benefits perspective, which, you know, the bulk of health benefits is actually employer-sponsored health insurance. No surprise to anyone. Within that, I think what we're seeing is the advent of telemedicine or telehealth. And that's something where via phone or often video conference, you'll talk to a healthcare provider, a nurse practitioner, maybe even an RN or certainly a PA or a physician about your health needs. Those could be acute needs, like you would maybe instead of, you know, going to the ER or to a quick care center, you dial up the video conference, or it could be something from a chronic management standpoint, like managing diabetes.
Is this something that we'll likely see more in a rural area, rural parts of the country, or is it something we would see in big cities as well?
It starts in the outlying areas for sure, just because, you know, for the obvious reasons. But we are starting to see them in metropolitan areas, and the biggest reason is cost savings. You know, these telemedicine or telehealth centers are run either by the insurance company, sort of as a value add, if you will, by the healthcare providers as maybe a lower cost way of delivering medical care, or by a third party vendor.
Because sometimes you go when you make an appointment as an employee, I make an appointment to see my doctor. Sometimes I go in and he just asks me questions, and maybe the nurse will take my temperature or something. All of those things you can do via video hookup, can't you?
Yeah, most of them you can. You know, the average primary care physician appointment is 15 minutes. Or it might be like 14 and a half, I believe, and that's nationwide. Now, if you have a huge laceration in your arm, you're going to the ER or the quick care. But diagnosing even something like strep, where certainly you would need the culture sample, but in beyond that, you may need just to look at a person's throat. Video cameras, the technology is there to look at a person's throat remotely.
And with some of the different wearable devices, you could also get a pulse reading. You could also take your own temperature. There's all kinds of things that...
That's exactly right. So for chronic disease management, maybe someone suffering from high blood pressure or something, and they wear a device on them that measures that for them, then they can meet maybe monthly with a provider via video conference where they talk about their daily habits, their exercise habits, their eating habits, all the things that might contribute to that hypertension.
One of the other big trends, and this is a 9 out of 10 employers, according to this one survey in 2017, had behavioral health plans. Walk us through this one.
Sure. Behavioral health, from an emotional standpoint, from a mental health standpoint, all of these things are coming more to light. I think it's always been there, but it's becoming more prevalent in the workplace to see how these things may manifest themselves into physical health problems, which from a company standpoint affects the bottom line. Maybe it's higher rates in health insurance, maybe it's absenteeism, or the idea of presenteeism in the workplace. Yeah, you're there present working, but are you really working? How much of your time is dedicated to that job when you're concerned or worrying about something else? So through an employee assistance program, through the health plan, through wellness initiatives, employers are becoming more concerned about that employee's mental and behavioral health as well.
And that sort of dovetails into the next one, which is the employee assistance programs. Those have always, it seems like, have always been part of benefits at companies. What has changed with those offerings?
I think they're becoming more robust. Okay. You know, the EAPs, when they start out, they're more or less referral services. And you'll still find some of those sort of skinny plans, if you will. But now you actually have coaching and counseling with regard to the EAP, where you might make an appointment with someone. And that kind of goes back to another way to deliver in the telemedicine realm, where you're talking on the phone to a counselor once a week or once a month. And that's all provided through that EAP, which could be its own standalone plan, that employee assistance program, or could be part of the employer-sponsored health plan.
And how are the, I'm always confused how EAP is different from, let's say,
counseling for weight loss or counseling for smoking cessation. How are they different?
Well, in a lot of times they are different because different providers may provide them. Mm-hmm. But oftentimes it's the same. And what we're seeing when I said the EAPs are becoming a little more robust, they are offering those type of services as well. So in addition to, you know, it could go on the spectrum from drug addiction counseling mm-hmm. all the way down to weight loss coaching and everything in between.
The other thing, too, that's gaining a lot of traction are the group efforts to get us all more healthy. So having a bicycle class, a spinning class, or a yoga class, or something like that to, I guess, mainly get us into a gym and working out, a participatory wellness is what it's called.
Yes, that's exactly right. You know, when you think of employer wellness, there's a huge spectrum. And on one end, maybe that the simpler end, the less complex end, is that participatory wellness where, hey, we're providing our employees with the opportunities, whatever they gravitate toward or whatever maybe would help solve their health problems, with the opportunities to improve and better their lives from a health perspective. Again, from that employer's perspective, that affects bottom line rates on insurance. That affects, you know, with fewer claims, for instance, or fewer chronic claims when a person is generally healthier. Helps absenteeism, helps workers' comp claims. You know, less likely a person will be injured at work if they're healthier, and things of that nature.
And the one that we talked to, and we know we talked on a past Thought Leader conversation about this, about companies giving you a financial incentive mm-hmm. to become healthy. I was surprised this one study, one report showed it jumping almost 10% from 56% in 2016 to 66% in 2017, the number of companies that are giving these incentives.
Yeah, I think that's for two reasons. One, more companies are just getting on board with the idea mm-hmm. because maybe their health insurance company, if they're fully insured, their health insurance carrier is offering programs or incentives for the company to offer these wellness incentives to their employees. The other reason is more companies are subscribing to the carrot approach instead of the stick approach. Yeah. Do you penalize someone on their health insurance premium, for instance? Do you have a smoking surcharge? Or do you provide an incentive for someone to join a smoking cessation program? The dollars might be exactly the same, but the mindset's different.
Or in some cases, if you're a not smoker, we will give you X amount of extra dollars an hour because
exactly.
you're not going out to smoke.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's right.
Or more vacation time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And those things could be done in maybe a taxable way, such as more time off or increased wages or a bonus. Mm-hmm. Or it could be done in a non-taxable or tax-free way through the health insurance plan. Again, maybe a contribution to the health savings account from the employer, which is tax-free to the employee, or a rebate off the premium cost to the employee mm-hmm. as well.
And Brett, I know we've talked about this too, about when these sorts of efforts become intrusive into the personal life of an employee.
Yeah.
That's still being addressed, I'm guessing.
It is. And employers are really, I mean, oftentimes taking the approach of let's try it and see how our population reacts. You know, every company has a different culture, obviously. And what might seem intrusive for one culture is different from another. And, you know, you have sort of a hip tech company with a lot of young people in a city where everyone bikes to work all the time. That's going to have a different culture than a manufacturing company in a rural part of the state. And so when you think of those two differences, then you also have to consider from a wellness perspective, what's being done for an employee versus what's being done to an employee. And we have talked about this before, but when we think of the idea of, you know, you have this maybe potentially disgruntled employee who had their shift changed, you know, coworkers were dismissed from their department, so their job got a lot harder. They're a little unhappy with their latest raise. And now they think, my company is telling me I can't smoke or how much I should weigh.
Yeah.
I'm sick of it. You know, so employers have to balance that reaction.
And one of the ways they're balancing it, I guess, could be personalizing the benefits. Instead of having a cookie cutter, mm-hmm. One size fits all, doing this individually with each employee. Is that something that's gaining traction?
It is for the right employer, because that does take time and cost money. You know, to individualize things. However, to your point, Steve, you see better results and certainly better acceptance. And it's how you really communicate the stuff and sell it to your employees as well.
Yeah, the scenario you gave is a good one. One I saw was older employees who felt that they because of their age or whatever physical condition they were in, couldn't participate with the younger employees because I guess there was a workout, a department workout routine that people were doing. The younger employees obviously went and did this, but the older employees felt like they were being left out a little bit because they couldn't do it.
Yeah. And companies have to be careful when they're installing these wellness initiatives because there's all kinds of employment laws that come into play, like that one, the Age Discrimination and Employment Act, for instance, the ADA, Americans with Disabilities Act. You know, that comes into play from the standpoint of, hey, if I'm unable to do whatever I need to do to get this health reward because of my disability or chronic medical condition protected under the ADA, what's my alternative that I can still get that reward? And if a company doesn't provide that alternative, they're in violation of the ADA.
The stakes here are pretty high on both sides, aren't they? I mean, you've talked about the financial part of this, but the last thing a company wants to be is brought into court on something like this.
Well, that's exactly right. And that's why, you know, it's more than a notion to adopt a wellness program or an initiative. And a lot of companies will dip their toes in the water and get a feel for it on some pretty benign stuff. But as they get more and more into what's beyond that participatory wellness and maybe something that would be outcome-based based on a person's health risk factor, they really need to get expert help and guidance from the proper benefits consultants to understand how to navigate those laws.
Have you, and I'm sure you have heard before from folks who always, the critics who say, never trust human resources, that they don't have the employee benefit at stake at heart. It's the company's benefit. But it sounds like all of the things we're talking about here, they really do want to have a healthier you.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the wellness initiatives, no matter what they may have started in, at the end result, it is going to be a healthier you. And if you gravitate toward a particular initiative because of a personal health problem that you have, it's only going to help you. Now, again, that's not to say all the companies, you know, notions are benevolent, right? We look at companies seeing this as a way to save money on health insurance claims and prevent absenteeism as well.
We've been talking a lot in the opening bell recently about mergers and acquisitions. This is a hot time for this. The impact of some mergers on health benefits and other employer offered benefits, it can be pretty severe, can't it?
It really can. And, you know, oftentimes in an M&A transaction, you have, you know, 100 lawyers working on this, charging obscene amounts of money, right? And they're dealing with the important security issues, which makes a lot of sense. Okay, from an exchange standpoint, if it's a stock sale or an asset sale, they have big federal regulations, oftentimes state regulations, that they have to comply with. Sometimes the forgotten aspect are the benefits and the HR. You know, how's payroll going to be run now?
Yeah.
You know, it's something as simple as that. No one thinks about until after the acquisition, oftentimes. And from a benefit standpoint, generally speaking, the acquiring company, it's their benefits that will prevail. Okay, are those better or worse than what the employees of the company being acquired are used to? Are they coming in as new hires without any seniority, or is that being adopted? There's all kinds of things that need to be thought about in an M&A transaction.
From an employee standpoint, how can we make sure that we're protected in this, or can we?
Well, I think being your own advocate, and if you have, you know, large enough to have a dedicated and robust HR department, you ask HR these questions. You know, the head of HR is going to have the ear of the CEO or the CFO, at least, people that are directly involved in the merger and acquisition transaction, even if that HR director is not. And they are going to need to really be an advocate then for their employees by saying, hey, this is going to significantly affect work product in the future.
Never be afraid of going and asking these questions.
Never.
All right. Brett, it's always good chatting with you. Thank you, and we'll see you again next time.
Sounds good, Steve. Thanks.
Brett McKittrick is the SVP and Senior HR Consultant at Associated Benefits and Risk Consulting, part of Associated Bank. It's our Thought Leader Conversation. We do it every Thursday for you right here on the Opening Bell. You can find more about our thought leaders and listen to past conversations at WGNradio.com, as well at Associated Bank's website. Just hit their website and go to / thought leadership.